When was the last time you refreshed your bedding? Sleep cooler with Avocado's naturally breathable, certified organic sheets. Choose from GOTS-certified organic cotton, linen, or hemp, all made-safe certified to the highest standards of non-toxic safety, delivering the ultimate in luxury, sustainability, and style, and a deeper, more restorative sleep. Join Avocado's mission to be one of the world's most sustainable brands at avocadomattress.com.
This podcast is supported by Talkspace.
When my husband came home from his military deployment, readjusting was hard for all of us. Thankfully, I found Talkspace.
Talkspace provides professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatric providers online. Military members, veterans, and their dependents ages 13 and older can get fast access to providers, all from the privacy of their computers or smartphones.
I just answered a few questions online, and Talkspace matched me with a therapist. We meet when it's convenient for me, and I can message her anytime. It was so easy to set up, and they accept TRICARE. Therapy was going so well, my husband and I started seeing a couples therapist through Talkspace, too.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, including TRICARE. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com/military. Go to Talkspace.com/military to get started today. That's Talkspace.com/military.
Dear readers, we did it. Do you know what we did since we last saw them?
I had a sip of juice. Wait, what?
We watched Ghost.
Oh, we watched Ghost. Carrie, how'd you like it?
Well, it was worked. This week I was babysitting kids, and I made an inappropriate joke. I was babysitting kids, and they were, like, obsessed with molding clay. And so I've been, like, making a lot of clay projects for them, which, by the way, I think I have a gift. I'm not an artist. I'm not a visual artist at all, but I think I'm killing it with clay. Like, I've made some really cool things. Like, I made a sea monster. I've made dinosaur, a dragon out of clay. Like, I've been doing well.
And what about a dreidel?
I haven't done a dreidel out of clay.
The song suggests you do.
The kids have very specific. I've made trees. I made a Christmas tree recycling plant island. I've made a
you
castle.
You made a recycling plant
a island? Christmas tree recycling island.
Mm-hmm. Out of clay.
Mm-hmm. I was talking to mom and I was like, I'm getting really good at this clay. And she's like, you're really good at it. I was like, I always was bad. I go, I did watch Ghost this week, so I feel like I'm prepped. I probably shouldn't say that because I'm watching her kids. And I made a joke about Ghost, about the clay. I thought it was pretty funny.
Did she laugh?
She laughed a little, yeah. That's okay, right?
Yeah, yeah. She probably thinks you're getting really romantic with her kids.
I was like, get off my clay. I'm like, don't touch it.
I know. It's hard to craft with kids for
it
that
is,
reason.
But it was so cool. The older one was like ordering me around, which was fine. Like, I'm okay with him being the architect and I'll be the engineer. The younger one though, the first day we like really worked together, we used like a fork to make the special Christmas trees, like to get the pattern on it. I was just like trying new things. It was really fun. Amazing. I really had a good time playing with them. Now I'm going to make origami on Friday.
Oh,
fun crafts, right?
Yeah, I'm getting angry with you.
Why?
I just don't do this stuff with my kids and it makes me feel inferior.
For the record, I babysit and I am not their caretaker. I am their babysitter.
Will you please do those activities with my kids so that I don't have to?
Absolutely. I love that. If you give me molding clay, let's fucking go.
All right, let's do this. Can I tell you my Christmas tree prank that I played?
Absolutely.
I might have already told you this. I'll be surprised if I hadn't because I'm proud of it. But in high school, my friend Tony, who you'll remember from the Patreon episode, he and I were driving around talking about how everyone just throws their Christmas tree on the curb and like, what could we do with them and all these things. And we decided to Christmas tree a friend of ours, his home, because we were near it. So we drove through the neighborhood, and what we would do is we'd grab a Christmas tree someone was getting rid of, you know, it was January or whatever, throw it up on the top of the Honda Accord, which is what everybody drives
in high school.
And we'd hold it with our hands out the window, drive to his house, and put it up against his front door. And then we'd go get another. and another and another. And we did it for hours till we had covered the front of his house in piles of Christmas trees. It's a really mean joke in retrospect.
Wait, it's like, so good. It's so good.
It's also harmless, but it's like egging someone's house, but Christmas tree in it.
It's way worse. It's way better because your egg stains. It's clean like this. You just have to like
might sweep. Have been a bit of a fire hazard, but it was, I think it was pretty funny.
Did he ever find out it was you?
Yes. And it's interesting because I think his parents were very angry with Tony, but did not know about my involvement. Anyway.
I do want to talk about our honest review of Ghost. It had been a while since you saw it. I saw it for the for the full thing. Uh-huh. Here's my takeaway from it.
Please.
There were so many cringy moments where we audibly, like, we couldn't keep our shit together. It was, I mean, what? Listen, what I enjoyed it. One, Patrick Swayze, what a fucking dreamboat. Whoopi Goldberg is so fucking funny. It's great. To me, some of the CGI, not great. But to me, the most cringe-worthy moment is you have Carl, his best friend, come over to visit Molly. She's mourning the death of her beloved boyfriend. And you see Carl spill coffee on himself and he takes his shirt off. So he's shirtless in front of Molly. And then Molly's crying about her dead boyfriend. And he starts aggressively, like, touching her face and, like, touching her bra strap and, like, grabbing it. It's, and all of us were like, stop touching her.
He's making a move and it's inappropriate and we're supposed to feel that way.
No, but that was so.
I think what bothered me is it was done under the guise of, you know, when you're really sad and your friend comes over and touches your face a lot.
We're supposed to, here's the thing though. We already, spoiler alert, we already don't like him because we found out that he's the reason. We found out that he's the guy, the reason why he's dead, he's the bad guy, right? It's been him all along. So we already know this. So any move he makes on Molly, we're going to hate anyway. Any overt. So the thing is my thing is, why did, and Molly doesn't raise a fucking blink to it. He's holding her face with both palms. He's pushing her hair away. He's grabbing her bra strap. Like, do you remember that part? Like, I mean, truly like this. Like, grab her bra. And you're like, what? First of all, I might be about to fuck a guy. I'm not nobody's grabbing. I don't know.
To be clear, Carl, we forgive the money laundering. We can even see past the plot to murder. But the face touching, Carl.
The
bra grabbing.
That's actually what did him in.
Offensive.
That's actually what got the crazy, weird shadow people.
They weren't going to come.
And then they saw the face touch and they were like, whoa, too far,
somebody,
Carl.
Take that guy out of here. Get him out of here with
Let's
that face touching.
Let's guillotine a fucking window pane. Let's go. It's like, that to me, though, like, I always find it so interesting. Like, I actually, why not seeing movies is a fun thing, is I get to see these old movies from, like, our current sort of vantage point. And I will say, we all had, like, a really good chuckle over
that
moment.
Some of them don't stand the test of time, is what you're saying.
It also was so funny that that was, like, an Oscar-nominated film.
Was it?
Whoopi Goldberg won.
Oh.
Didn't she win an Oscar for that role?
She's great.
I mean, she's an EGOTer. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. She got her EGOT. I think it's Ghost.
She's an EGOT? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow. Cool.
I think so.
Whoopi Goldberg sings?
No, but you can have, like, a spoken word album. Let me see. Let me Google this. She is one of 16 entertainers to win an Emmy Award, a Grammy Award, an Academy Award, and a Tony Award.
Oh, shit. I had no idea she could sing.
Well, I don't think it's...
What do you win the Grammy for? Singing?
It's the award. No, Grammy is spoken word, too. You can do an album.
Oh.
Okay. She won Best Comedy Album Recording in 1985 from Whoopi Goldberg, direct from Broadway.
Incredible.
So
not a singer.
No, comedy album.
Okay. Speaking of not being a singer, but faring well in the comedy department, do you want to thank a couple patrons? What about Karen?
What about Karen?
I wanted to share it with about Karen.
Karen is our friend.
When you go, hi, I'll go low.
That's the opposite of the show. When you go high, I'll go low.
I didn't mean like in life.
No, but I would like to keep it.
You when know you my go motto. High,
I feel like that's like, I have people in my life that are like, well, when you go high, I go low. I have people in my life like that.
I know who you're talking about. Jennifer is not who you're talking
Jennifer's
about.
Jennifer's not who I'm talking about.
You would never talk about Jennifer that way.
Jennifer, as in my favorite Lopez? No. Is she my favorite Lopez? Do I like George Lopez better? I think Jennifer Lopez is my favorite Lopez.
When you go J-Lo, I go J-High. J-Lo, J-High, J-High.
We just did a song for J-Lo. She's not a Patreon subscriber.
You're right.
She doesn't know what the fuck we use. She's too busy fucking Ben Affleck.
Let's invoice her for a Patreon subscription and explain that we already did the song.
Could you imagine sending invoices to people we know for $7 for a Patreon every month? Like, I can find people's emails and be like, here's an invoice for a Patreon.
We accept Venmo.
That would be really good. Let's do that as a prank.
Okay.
But Jennifer, thank you for joining Patreon. You're a great, great friend and not a foe. Jennifer,
I'm really letting you fly solo on this one.
I thought that was good. I actually feel good about that one. That could be a nice ringtone.
Yeah, that was sweet.
Thank you. We changed genres.
No, do it again backward.
Okay. Can't you renifrage? Okay, well, I guess if you join Patreon, your name would be here, but that's on you.
That's on you.
And
we need to raise some money because I want to get a billboard for Carrie in Times Square.
Oh, yeah. We talked about this. Did you see, if you're not in on the hot goss, there was a mom who is sick. She's like terminally ill cancer, or she's like, and she really wants to see her daughter married off. Finding.
Married off is aggressive.
It's really aggressive.
Find love is the kinder way, I think.
She's wants her daughter to find love. So she worked with a dating company and she posted a billboard for her daughter, which, by the way, so it's on Times Square being like, hey, date my daughter. I feel like you'll get a lot of creeps that way is my concern, but.
We go low, you go high. And then I get really high.
No, I like so when I you go high, I go so low. I'm sorry. When you go high, I go low might be my favorite.
Should we get down to brass tacks?
Okay, tell me a story. Wait, and now a word from our sponsors?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, would you want a drink?
Yeah, what do you got there?
Okay, it's called Inbooze. I have a spicy tequila to basically make yourself a spicy margarita. And all you do is you take this incredible, it's almost like a tea steeping kit.
Like a sachet.
And you put it in your hooch and you infuse it so that when you make the cocktail, you don't have to worry if you have limes, peppers, you don't have to do anything. It's like this dehydrated fruit that you put in your cocktail and you brew a gorgeous cocktail that you just have to like throw some seltzer in and boom, you got it. You're done.
What is this called?
It's called Inbooze.
Okay, I'm looking up. Ashley is a mom of four and a cocktail lover that started it. And I feel like we'd be friends.
Ashley, I think we would be friends too.
She's like involved in the entire process and they try to get everything locally, like Michigan apples and cherries. She tries to support local businesses and they make all these different ones. They can do bloodies. They can do sangrias. They can do mules. And this one is spicy margarita that you just handed me?
Yes.
Oh my God. It's so good.
It's delicious.
I love this.
If you want to buy your own sachet of party amplification, go to inbooze.com or visit Inbooze on Instagram at inboozekits. And we'll put all of that in our show notes as well. So you can find it there.
Cheers.
Dear readers, we have another podcast rec. And we're really partial to it because we're featured in it. Let's be honest. Let's say it up
front. Let's be honest with our arrogance. Indie Drop-In Network's Scary Time is awesome. They're going to do a scarier paranormal story every single week. And each week is going to feature a different independent
podcast creator. That way you get a little sample. You decide, is this relationship right for me? Do I want to commit? And then you can go ahead and find that podcast creator and listen to their show. But in the meantime, every week you're going to get some sort of story about, I don't know, a haunted thing, an alien, a creepy spot, a monster. What's not to like? You know, we love that here. In fact, we love it so much they've featured us on Indie Drop-In Network Scary Time. So jump on there today and re-listen to our episode and find some new people to listen to.
It's like having a first date with a bunch of podcasters.
That's totally, and we know you guys love dating. Date it up.
So find it wherever podcasts are listened to. Indie Drop-In, Scary Times, go get scared. Do I want to exercise every day? Yes. Do I? No. Do I want to eat a healthy meal every day? Yes. Do I? No. Would it be helpful if somebody emailed me every morning recipes and exercises I can do at home? Yes. That's why I'm here to talk to you about Movement and Meals. It's a newsletter that is delivered to your inbox every morning that says, hey, here's a recipe, here's a way to move your body, and you do it. What's really cool about it too is if you sign up for this newsletter on Saturdays, they send you a shopping list for what you need for the upcoming week. So it's like mindless. You just can have healthy meals, do exercises without having to think about it. So you can try this for 2 weeks for free at movementandmeals.substack.com. And after the 2 week trial, it's just $7 a month. That's it. It's like 35 cents a day for somebody else to just make all those decisions for you, which, let's be honest, that's what we want. We want someone to tell us what to do so that we don't have to use that part of our brain. So sign up for Movement and Meals for free for 2 weeks at movementandmeals.substack.com and let's outsource someone controlling that part of our life, right? I could use that. Could you? Again, movementandmeals.substack.com. Get your life right.
What'd you guys do during that ad break? Did you listen to the ads?
Did you fast forward?
Did you buy all the things we told you to buy?
Guys, I just did this morning I did a self tape and I showed Quinn.
Oh my God, you guys. I'm going to share it with you if you're a Patreon subscriber. It's so amazing. Can I show them just the full body shot on Patreon? Tell them what you have to do for the full body.
In order to audition, they're like, hey, we need you to say your name, your height, show your hands, your side profile, and then we want a full body shot. Now, I'm by myself. I'm by myself, okay? And so I have to set up a camera shot where I stand and it's a full body shot and I have 25 seconds of me standing, not knowing where to put my hands, but just trying different poses so that I can cut the one that I like. And it's me smiling like a fucking lunatic, posing and just shifting weight to see what's the most flattering angle, because I can't see. It's like the camera, it is 20 seconds of just sheer pain.
It's so funny. It's so funny. It's my favorite thing. It's my favorite piece of art.
And there's no music. It's
just getting standing, just smiling.
In like
for
leggings.
20 seconds.
In leggings and a turtleneck. So it's like form fitting. And you're like, I hate my life right now. I really do.
I'm going to post it on Patreon. I have to.
Oh my God.
It's my favorite thing. It's so just like, good.
It's one thing if it's up, but it's like, it's going to email everyone. Like we can't just like I would casually post it on Patreon
if they want this content.
But the thing is if it's gonna shoot an email out being like, hey everyone, hey
Truly Darkly Creepily, hey, posted something,
hey, to our dozens of people who pay us money, let me show you me standing in front of my wall for 20 seconds.
Oh God, it's so good.
It's really bad, but give the people what they want.
Counterpoint, give the people what they don't want and never asked for.
Speaking of which, we actually have to do our dance video for the
Amazing Race submission.
1000%. No, we have to do our Music League dance video for Patreon.
Cool.
Okay.
Carrie.
Quinn.
Harry.
Quan.
All right. I'm going to be doing a story. Oh, this story is...
rough?
Yeah, this is rough. New York Times, New Yorker, and the St. Louis Post Dispatch by Stephen Pokin, who incidentally, I think, writes columns for them called Pokin Around. And I think that's really...
What would your editorial column be?
Queries with Quinn.
Oh, wrong. Okay.
What would yours be?
I was posing a question with the Posner.
Oh, that's even better. Posing a question with the Posner. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
That's good. This is a story about Megan Meyer.
You can ask me mine. I'm just kidding.
Oh. I feel so rude. Carrie cares?
I mean, I probably do like carrying on. Carried away.
It be my business. Up in
what is, I pee my pants. Another queer. I pee my
I pee my pants.
I don't know why that's killing me. Oh, that's killing me.
Well, the trick is you have to make fun of your name before anyone else did, so I came up with Gary. I pee my pants.
Oh, God, that's so good. Oh, I'm weeping. I needed that.
By the way, you're listening to Truly.
Darkly.
Greenly. I'm Carrie, I pee my pants. And that's query
time. Oh, God, I gotta get it together. Fuck. I can't stop. All right.
Who?
You see my...
Sorry, you're just scared to stop.
Who? Woo!
Okay.
All right.
Oh. All right. You're doing the story of
Megan Meyer.
Megan.
Ron and Tina Meyer met as kids. They went to prom together. They're married young and they have a little baby girl named Megan. They live on Waterford Crystal Drive in Waterford Crossing.
That's too much.
It is.
That is so much pretension in a street name. I can't even handle it.
But whatever you're picturing.
It's opposite day.
No. Oh. That's exactly right. It's like the matchy match houses.
Yeah.
And where they're like, you're only allowed this many pets.
I bought a home here. Like,
I'm an adult.
Why
can I please get a parakeet? Yeah. No, you cannot.
Actually, don't ever get a parakeet. They fucking weird me out. Don't get a bird that sits in a cage all day. That's just rude.
Yeah, we don't want to know why the cage bird sings. We just want to let the cage bird out.
We just want to let the cage bird fly.
This is like a Stepford Wives community, and it's white picket
fences
with white picket people. Okay, so despite growing up in this wonderful place...
It probably was, like, idyllic, but, like, is there, like, an underlying surface of, like, but keep your shit together?
But isn't it always that? Like, I just, yeah, it's gross. Anyway, Megan, as a third grader, tells her mom that she wants to kill herself. It's really sad. They take her to see a psychiatrist, and she does get some drugs prescribed for depression. Megan's really body conscious.
Oh, no.
And she's unhappy with her weight starting at a really young age.
Ugh.
Yeah. In 2005, Megan would have been, I think, 12. She likes volleyball. She likes going fishing with her dad. She has a chihuahua she really loves named Barry. Despite these insecurities, she's a really loud, funny kid.
Right.
With a big personality. And a lot of her friends would describe her as fearless. She's kind. There's a blind kid at their school, and she volunteers to be the person to walk the blind kid to their classes.
Yeah.
But, you know, she is having a hard time. She's in seventh grade. And I think she's starting to have that, like, lethal mixture of what teen or tweenage girls are, where it's that it's like the Pen 15
right
dichotomy,
right?
Where on the one hand you want to, your honest self is still a child and wants to play pretend and like do really innocent things and Right. And there's like the other part of you that is like, and I want to be sexy, you know?
Yeah, you're really straddling, pardon the probably not appropriate word, but you're really straddling to a...
You want to be young and old at the same time.
Yeah.
And there's no room for you. Like, this world is not built for teenage girls.
No.
There's just no room to be that. She's been hanging out a lot with Sarah, her neighbor down the street, a few doors down, Sarah Drew. And Sarah Drew's parents bought the house from her mom. Like, her mom's in real estate and, like, sold them the house in the tight-knit community that they live in. And everyone kind of thinks that family, the Drews, are, like, a little maybe overbearing.
Okay.
They're a bit much. Like, I even read somewhere that Megan's mom, Tina, would have, like, a signal with a friend when Lori Drew was, like, talking to her to, like, get out of conversations.
Totally.
Like, I think they're just a bit much. They, Sarah and Megan, start a MySpace account secretly, and they end up getting caught by the mom, and it has a Playboy bunny icon or something.
Because they just don't know what,
they don't know what they're doing. And then Lori Drew, Sarah's mom, is like, what are all these weird calls on my phone bill? And Sarah's like, oh, well, Megan and I met someone on the MySpace account, a boy that wanted to talk to us that lived in New York, and Megan was calling him. So, you know, they're getting into the typical things that girls that age get into. Megan and Sarah are close. Like, they go on vacations together. Megan goes on vacations with the Drew family.
Right.
But it's also one of those teenage girl relationships where they're best friends one week and not talking the next.
Mm.
And what basically happens is that in eighth grade, their relationship kind of disperses.
Disperses. That's the word.
I'm sure it's not. And I think that that is hard, not just on Sarah, but her parents.
Yeah.
Because they also really want to fit in that community. But Megan starts going to a new school in eighth grade called Immaculate Conception Dardenne. It has uniforms, which actually is something I feel very mixed feelings about.
I do too.
But I can see where...
I see the pros and the cons of both sides. And I actually sometimes envied having it, I wanted a uniform growing up.
You didn't have one.
I did not. Did you?
No.
Never. I wanted one growing up because there was something about, like, you know, not having to think about that has to be good. And kids are so make fun of you for your clothes can be. It's like, what's a way to sort of put us all on the same...
Completely.
Playing field.
They're always going to worry about something, their skin, their hair, their weight. But I think taking that off a young girl's plate could actually be conducive to.
I would support a uniform with plenty of choices that would allow for expression within the constraints of a uniform.
That's a good idea. I also kind of like it because it takes away like the money thing. Where you've got kids in middle school or high school or whatever that are wearing really expensive name brands and kids that feel pressure to be able to afford that.
Exactly.
I don't know. And you can't get a very good job in middle school, so you're not making a ton of money. Anyway, Megan at this point goes to her mom and is like, I'm 13 now. I'm going to be 14 soon. I really, really want a MySpace account. Can I please have a profile? And her mom's like, ooh, it kind of skeeves me. I'm nervous about it. Listen, here's what we're going to do. You can have one, but we're going to monitor the shit out of it. Like, we have rules. And in my opinion, the rules that Tina creates are great. Rule number one is that she and Megan's dad are the only people that know the password. So they're the only people that can sign into it. She can't sign into it without them. It has to be set to private. I don't totally know what that means because I don't really know MySpace.
I assume it's the same thing of like...
Facebook, yeah. So you have to have friended somebody for them to look at your stuff or whatever. They have to approve the content that goes into it. Her profile.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to be, this one's really good parents, I think. they have to be in the room at all times when she's on it. She can't be alone in her room on it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in September of 2006, she is allowed to create this MySpace account. Her name on it is Pretty N Bling 16. Like Pretty and Bling.
Okay.
Both. Two great things. We love Pretty. We love Bling. She's 16. She is not, but probably that's like the golden age she wants to be or something. Her profile has, what are those called? Where you do your name, like each letter of your name.
Oh, an acrostic?
Yes. It has one of those. And hers says, M is for modern, E is for enthusiastic, G is for goofy, A is for alluring, N is for neglected. And that is the most teenage, you said it's called an acrostic?
Uh-huh.
How teenage is that?
Goofy, neglected.
Alluring. Like it's like, it.
Poor thing, but also she's neglected is going to leave him wanting more.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. She's trying to seem, like, mature in it, I think.
Totally. Everything that we've said.
She says in it, I'm an eighth grader at ICD school. I'm going to St. Dominic High School. I, like, love to hip-hop dance, and I love to shop. Yeah, there's really hot with two T's guys at my school. They are fine.
Her parents approved that?
I mean, it's...
I'm sorry, I have notes. I would love to be like, so why do you want to say there's hot guys at your school? Like, what's going on there?
Oh, my God. It must be so hard to have a 12 or 13-year-old
girl. That's, like, the hardest. I think my mom says that that might be the hardest age because, like, hormones are fucking raging. Real. Yeah.
So a few months after she starts this, a few weeks after she starts this profile or whatever, she gets a friend request from a guy named Josh Evans. He's 16. He's really cute. His profile talks about how he likes snakes and he hates sushi and how this is pretty cool. He owns a trillion CDs. Sounds like a cool guy. But also he's got depth because he talks about on his profile how when he was a kid, his dad left. And so his mom's like a single mom. Okay, so he's a pathological
liar? The trillion CDs? Oh, okay. Sorry.
He has a trillion. He counted them, Carrie. And he says, poor mom. Yeah, she had such a hard time finding work to pay for us after he left. There's also a part where you talk about what your goal is, like a goal you want to achieve. And he says, meet a great girl.
So mature.
He wants her to have long brown hair, and Megan has long brown hair. And then when they said what kind of, there's like an area where you could say like what you're looking for in terms of a girl, and it says weight, and he says don't really matter.
Good.
So Megan's like, I like this guy.
Why on earth would they ever have that field for a person you're looking for and have so a weight? Gross. How could they ever do that? But okay.
So Megan's like, mom, please, can I add this guy as a friend? And the mom's like, ugh. Ooh, I guess so. But if he says anything I don't like, gone.
Mm-hmm.
And the mom is like, her blink's a little going off because they start talking to MySpace, but he never asks to call Megan. And at one point, Megan asks to call him. And he's like, oh, I don't have a cell phone and we don't have a landline. And I'm like, everyone has a landline. She wants to like try to figure out if this Josh person is legitimate. And she says she called the police to try to figure out, which is, I don't understand how you can call the police and be like,
is this a real person
on MySpace? Like, I don't know if that works. So she's like, this is feeling weird, but also I'm seeing Megan be really happy. So she lets them keep talking. On October 15th, he writes to Megan, and it's kind of a change in tone where he says, I heard that you were mean to your friends. And Megan gets really anxious and is like, what? How about no? Where the hell did you get this? And she starts writing like every 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that frantic feeling.
Yeah.
And it's like, who are you even talking about? Yeah, I don't know. And then 2 minutes later, she'll be like, okay, how about no? Tell me who they are. And then she's like, why did you say this? What the hell? And then she's like, what the hell did I even say? She just is panicked. Like, in a span of 10 minutes, she sends, like, message.
Of course.
The next day, Megan goes to school and she's passing out invitations because it's going to be her 14th birthday soon. Her mom picks her up from school and takes her home. She is like, can I get on MySpace and on the basement computer? The mom's like, yes. Signs her in. And then almost as soon as she signs her in, she's like, ooh, I have to go take your sister to the orthodontist. The dad's upstairs napping. She calls and Megan's crying and says, have you signed off? And she says, no, mom. They're all being so mean to me. And she says, you're not listening to me, Megan. Sign off right now. 15 minutes later, Megan calls her mom and is crying even more and says, they are posting bulletins about me. And I guess a bulletin on MySpace is like a survey. And it would say things like, Megan Meyer is a slut. Megan Meyer is fat. Like mean, mean stuff. And she's like, mom, I can't even explain. And she's frantic. The mom gets home. Megan is still in front of the computer. She's bawling. She's heated. She's calling people names on the computer and being really aggressive as well. It's gotten completely out of control. So she and her mom start fighting. And she sees that someone had sent Megan a message that called her fat. And that Megan wrote, I'm skinny now. And her mom is like, why would you even say that, Megan? Like, I think she's like, the mom's in distress about, like, oh, the whole thing is like absolutely.
This is so heartbreaking.
I mean, it's so sad. And so she starts yelling at her mom, being like, you're supposed to be on my side. She feels like.
She feels attacked. I'm sure Megan feels attacked from literally everyone.
She runs up the stairs. Her dad, Ron, is awake now, and she runs into him on the way up the stairs, and he's like, what's happening? And she goes to her room. Tina stays downstairs and is like talking to her husband, cooking dinner and explaining what happened. And suddenly in the middle of the conversation, she freezes because her blink goes off.
Yeah.
And she runs into Megan's room. And Megan has used an Old Navy cloth belt to hang herself. She's dead.
No.
So sad. The dad, after they've like taken her to the hospital, after Megan has died, the dad goes to the computer and sees that the final message sent on the computer was a message from Josh. And it says, you're a shitty person and the world would be a better place without you in it. By the next morning after Megan has died, the Josh Evans profile has vanished. It's no longer online. The parents are beyond devastated. They go down the street to like talk to people about what happened. They go to Sarah's house and they tell the Drews this happened. And they actually end up going to Sarah's 14th birthday, which would have been right around Megan's. And it's really emotional for them because
it's their daughter.
Their daughter will never turn 14. They also agree to store. This will come to play later on, but they agree to store a foosball table that belongs to the Drews that they got as a Christmas present. I think they're like hiding it from their kids for the next month because it's whatever. So they're like, will you keep this for us in your garage? They're like, yeah. So they have the Drews foosball table in their garage. 6 weeks after Megan dies, a different neighbor from this neighborhood that lives down the street calls them and says, can we meet at a counselor's office? I have to talk to you about something. They meet this person and she says, I want you to know that the Drews did this. The dad, Kurt, the mom, Lori, and their daughter, Sarah, and an 18-year-old girl, Ashley Grills, that works for them, they were Josh. Like, they created that fake profile. One thing you need to know, I think you already know, is that this family knew Megan really well. they knew that she was on medication for depression. She'd been on vacations with them. This mom says the reason they created this profile, Josh Evans, was they wanted to see, specifically mostly the mom, Lori, wanted to see if Megan was talking shit about Sarah. Because they had heard that, like, she had called Sarah a lesbian or something. And they were like, let's try to entrap her and see if she's going to talk shit. And then she does talk shit about our kid, we'll bring it to Tina and be like, look, Megan's gossiping about our daughter. She says that Lori, the mom, laughed about it and said that her intent was to mess with Megan. The reason that this mom knows this is that her daughter was playing at Sarah's house and was given the account info of Josh Evans as like a, oh, if you ever want to get on the computer and pretend to be Josh Evans and mess with Megan, here's the sign in. And that day that somebody wrote, I heard you're mean to your friends, and this all sort of began the day before her death, that was that woman's daughter writing that.
Oh my God.
She also says that when Megan died, Lori, Drew, called her daughter and was like, you better keep your mouth shut about that account existing.
I am so floored right now.
They go to their garage and they fucking tear into that foosball table. They use an axe and a sledgehammer on it. And then they take all the smashed up pieces of the table and they walk down the street to the Drew's house and they dump it in their yard in a box that says Merry Christmas. The FBI is investigating it, and they basically ask the Myers, you know, you can't really talk about this publicly. You can't be going around.
Megan's parents?
Yes, you can't be telling, it could screw up our investigation, so you can't talk about the Drews right now. It's been about a year since Megan died, and her aunt sees an article written by this guy, Steve Poken, in the Suburban Journals, and it's about internet harassment. She contacts Poken and is like, I want to share my niece's story with you. And he breaks the story, Steve Poken. And then it breaks and it's local news, and then quickly it's national news, and then quickly it's international news. So Lori tells the police that even though she feels like what happened contributed to Megan's suicide, she didn't feel that guilty because at the funeral she found out that Megan had tried to commit suicide before.
You are a mother to a teenage girl. There is nothing. You are a mother. You are a guardian. It is your job to protect. That is not protecting your kid. That is not, like, I can't even.
Their lawyer, the Drew's lawyer, was like, well, all the messages were positive until the last 24 hours of the correspondence, and that wasn't even necessarily my client's. Basically, the defense is like, Lori Drew didn't know about any of these really mean or negative comments that were going to Megan until it was too late. But Ashley Grills, this young girl, this 18-year-old that worked for the Drews and was there and was part of creating this account, says this was Lori's idea. She was the mastermind. And again, she wanted to lure Megan to say things about Sarah behind her back and then bring it to Tina. But then she got into, like, humiliating her. And she was asking me to write these things. And I am 18. This woman was like a mom to me. I worked for her. I thought that she wouldn't let me do anything that would get me in trouble. Or she wouldn't let me do anything that would get out of control. I mean, this girl, Ashley, that's 18, was hospitalized for depression after this happened. And the Myers have spoken out and said, we don't blame you, Ashley, for this happening. But they really fell apart. They have since got a divorce, Megan's parents. And after reviewing the case, the prosecutors are like, we're not going to file any criminal charges in relation to the hoax.
No.
Yeah. What happened was that she was indicted, Lori, and convicted by a jury for violations of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, okay? Mm-hmm. But her conviction was vacated by a judge post-trial on grounds that the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act didn't intend to criminalize the kind of conduct that she was doing. And the government could have appealed, but they don't.
Does she feel remorse?
I can't answer that. I can tell you that there were social ramifications, which is to say the dad, Carl Drew, would get in his car just to drive to the end of the driveway to go to his mailbox to get the mail, because people are throwing shit at their house. People throw a brick through their window. They paintball
them.
That
is so vile. They have like a coupon business. That is vile.
They have a coupon business. And Tina is going to the businesses that work with them being like, do you know that they did this to my daughter?
Yeah.
Do you still want to work with them? And trying to get people to boycott businesses that work with them. People are going on message boards in the community and posting their home addresses and their business address under headings that say child killer.
I don't understand. Like, I don't under one, you know, this child is suffering with depression. You're bullying a kid. Like, I don't understand in what world would you like, I don't need to be 12 again, okay? That was hard enough the first time. In what world would I return in fake profile? Like, what is wrong with people?
Yeah.
That is so shocking. I'm floored by this story. I'm so irate right now because it's like, it reminds me of the I Love You Now Die case. It also reminds me of the, like, the woman I did who was doing fake allegations online, like, this online harassment where the law online has not caught up to the crimes.
Yeah, this case was big. It did cause several jurisdictions to consider legislation prohibiting harassment over the internet. And the Megan Meyer Foundation was founded by Tina in 2007, which, you know, that's a cyberbullying prevention foundation. Her dad says, oh, this kills me. If only she had waited, talked to someone, or just made it to dinner, then through the evening, then on to the beginning of a new day in what could have been a remarkable life. If she had, he says, there's no doubt she would have chosen to live. So stupid. It's so sad.
I just am going to say, if you or anyone you know...
If you or anyone you know has a mental illness or is struggling emotionally... or has concerns about your mental health, call 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255. That's Lifeline. It's free. It's confidential. It's a crisis service that's available 24 hours a day.
Thank you.
That's the story of Megan Meyer, which also came to be known as the MySpace suicide hoax. Hoax in that,
yeah,
Josh was a hoax perpetrated by
a mom who a knew mother. The kid. I could like understand a creepy adult or a shit, but like a mom who knew that, like, I can't understand any of it, but like to be so pointed about it is, I think, the most shocking thing to me, you know, because it was intentional and it. Ugh. And now a word from our sponsors.
Nice. Do you get confused by essential oils?
I don't know how to use them, but I know I like them.
And that's how I feel too. And I want to be a person that uses them. Like, I support it, but what am I doing? You know?
Totally.
So there's this company, Simply Earth, that you're going to love. They send you an essential oil recipe box with everything you need. So it has the oils, and it teaches you how to use them. It says, oh, do you want to make a, I don't know, a cream out of this, a lotion? Do you want to make a deodorant out of this? And it shows you exactly how to use your oils, which are all, by the way, totally toxin-free.
They sent us a package of what you would receive. And can I tell you, it was like Christmas morning here. Simply Earth gives 13% of all profits to end human trafficking around the world as well.
Gotta support that.
I love a company that helps, but also does some really nice, cool shit that's meaningful.
Whole thing, this whole kit, it's not gonna break your budget. It's gonna make also a completely rad gift, wouldn't you say?
If you use the code TDC, if you go to simplyearth.com/TDC, you get a free essential oil diffuser.
That's a good deal.
So again, if you want it, which you should, go to simplyearth.com/TDC and start smelling beautiful today. Are we back? Do you feel a little bit less icky?
Probably not, but there's always room to feel like you're. Why don't we hear a story from you?
Okay. Mine's like a little bit more lighthearted, so
I imagined that it would be impossible for it not to be.
So I'm doing the Chilean mining incident.
Let's do this thing.
Do you remember in 2010? Do you remember this?
No, I don't.
It was in Wikipedia, Decode by Discovery, Britannica, The Infographic Show, CNN, New York Times, NPR. This is the copper mine. It's a copper mine. It's a San Jose mine, and it's near North Copiapo, Chile. In the mine, it's 10 miles of tunnels underneath the mine. The shafts are a mile deep. This specific mine that we're at, like, mining is a pretty big industry. Mining is a big industry in Chile. This mine specifically, the owners had a history of operating unsafe mines. In fact, between 2004 and 2010, they were fined 42 times for safety violations. The pay at this mine, however, was much higher than other mines because of its unsafe conditions. So they compensated their workers a little bit more, but is it ever worth it, right? Since 2000 in Chile, about 34 people die per year in mining accidents. In 2008, it was 43 people. So it's like, listen.
It's not getting better?
No, it like ranges and like, I mean.
Yeah. Doesn't sound like we found a way to
make it safe. No. I mean, yeah. I mean, it's a lot. And you have people that are in this area. You have people that are traveling. Because it's, I think it's like you do 12-hour shifts, 7 days a week for like a tour, and then you leave. So it's like they have constantly people coming in and changing and all that stuff. So it's August 5th, 2010. Miners enter and they're working. All of a sudden they hear the ground shaking and rocks falling. At 2 p.m. there was a massive cave-in. A group near the entrance manages to flee, to escape, to get out. But there are 33 miners that are unaccounted for. Immediately, rescue efforts go into place. They have near the entrance, it's completely blocked by rocks. So they're like trying to move it, and they realize like these are huge rocks. They're also sometimes load-bearing rocks. So they're like still having some issues. 2 days later, there's another collapse in the mine. They find that the main granite that's blocking the entranceway and access to these miners is a 700,000-ton granite.
That sounds really big.
Right now, they're like, we're looking for the 33 miners. We don't know if they're alive. We don't know what's going on.
Right.
So they're up at the top, and it's like not a great mapping system of the mines, right? They're not like, oh, yes, I know exactly where this is. It's like a little bit of an exact science. So they're like, listen, we know 2,300 feet down, there is a refuge that the miners could be.
Mm-hmm.
We think this could be where they are. So they start drilling boreholes down into it. Now, again, they're not able to like, I mean, they're just like finding boreholes wherever they can, just trying to access it and seeing what happens.
Sounds really dangerous.
Mm-hmm. It is really dangerous,
okay.
Quinn.
Okay.
It's not great. I mean, if someone hears a drill coming, they can like move or
okay.
Whatever.
I guess that's what I'm picturing. All right.
So at this time, the government is involved. Private donations are there. This rescue is going to cost upwards of $20 million. It is a expensive task and a dangerous task. So they're drilling holes in an attempt to find miners. The collapse happened initially on August 5th. It is August 19th. So they drill down and they're like, oh, this is where the miners might be. Like, we think this could be it. And there's no sign of life.
Mm-hmm.
So they come back out and they're like drilling. 3 days later, they end up drilling this hole near a ramp near mm-hmm. where the refuge is. It manages to like break the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And they hear taps
mm-hmm.
on the drill.
Taps.
Like okay. something hitting. And they're like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. But like, did we hear it? What's going on? So they bring the drill bit up. And at the bottom of the drill, there is a taped note that says, all 33 of us are fine in the shelter.
What?
In Spanish.
Wow. Great.
I'm amazed that the tape lasted that long.
Yeah. I'm like, this should be a commercial in this moment for whatever that tape was.
Whatever that tape is. You did good. I want it. So this had been, what, the 5th to the 22nd, 17 days. The miners have been down there for 17 days. They have a refuge. The food that is in there is supposed to last 2 to 3 days. Because of their rationing, they're alive. There is no, they have all lost around an average of 18 pounds, but they're alive. What happened in the 17 days since the initial collapse was they were all together. The collapse happened. They all made their way to a refuge. The dust from the collapse initially leaves them blind for 6 hours.
That sounds unpleasant.
Really unpleasant. Initially, they have to figure out what happened. So they all go out and they're all like accessing different areas to sort of like gain a bearing of what they have access to. And they're starting to like look for any way out.
Mm-hmm.
There's no electricity. There's no ventilation. There's no communication. All connections to the surface are completely lost. They've tried to get out through like these ventilation shafts, but based on cutting corners and, you know, tossing aside safety precautions, the ladders that were supposed to bring them to safety don't go anywhere. The refuge that they are basically living in is 50 square meters with 2 long benches. They also have access to about a mile of open tunnels to get away for some privacy or to get some exercise. The food, like I said, was supposed to last 2 to 3 days. It's lasted for 17 days. What they did is they rationed it where every 48 hours they got 2 cookies, a spoonful of tuna, and a few ounces of milk mixed with water. That was it.
Okay.
Every 48 hours.
The Santa diet.
It's a lot.
It's cookies and milk.
Cookies and milk, yeah. Well, initially what happened was a bunch of guys went to the refuge and they were like nom and cookies and they were like, whoa, 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 stop. We don't have enough. Please stop. They then started working in sleep shift schedules. So they would like use their lights to make it look like it's sunlight to try to keep some regularity of like sleep deprivation and stuff like that. And they called themselves the 33. Where they were at, it was about 90 degrees with a 90% chance humidity. Because remember, they're so far down near the core, it's getting hotter and hotter. So it's 90 degrees on average, 90% humidity. So they're discovered. They need help. They need resources. They're in a semi-state of starvation. There is risks of sleep shifting, which is this like not having daylight, not having any sort of like way to monitor your sleep schedule. Immediately what they do is they contact NASA, which has a lot of experience in isolation. They call NASA and NASA helps them by giving them 2 physicians, 1 psychologist and an engineer to sort of help sort of regulate them and also like provide some advice. So some of the things they told them was like, it's really important to maintain contact with family and friends. So when they discovered these miners, they initially sent down a camera. So they got some grainy footage of all of the men and all the men were in like pretty decent moods. They were okay. Then they started going, they brought them down a 2-way radio and video so they could have contact with people. The first video that came was like 28 of the 33 were on tape because like some of them were shy, which I actually like that like even in like, you know, survival mode, there are people that are like, not me. I don't want a photo of me, please.
Yeah.
So the one guy was like holding the camera and like filming for everybody. They were allowing family members to write letters to the minors and they could write it back. Mm-hmm. But they were like, keep it light, keep it positive. Mm-hmm. The first thing that when they have a video come down, this guy, Luis Urzúa, who became sort of the de facto leader in a lot of ways, he was like, well, it's been a long shift, was what he said after 17 days in a mine. They bring down a screen. They start to feed them food. However, they go very slowly because they realize that their body was in starvation mode. So they like are like working calorically with like making sure they're getting back and they're okay and they're safe. So they started on a diet of like 500 calories a day and then slowly increased it. They also felt like it was super important for the miners to be a part of their rescue, which is like giving them hope and giving them promise and like making them active, which I thought was really interesting to like give them something to do.
Oh, yeah. That's like the Thai rescue that he was always like, we were like taking turns working on digging this thing that I knew was not going to help. But totally. We needed purpose. You lose hope. You have nothing and you're going to die sooner.
Totally.
Your body's going to stop fighting.
So they had like two other holes. One was like they were pumping an oxygen down there. And the other one was transporting food, medicine, and water. So most of the miners are Roman Catholic. Chile, I think, is a pretty Christian country or Catholic country. So when they were down there, they asked for Bibles. They asked for rosaries, statues of the Virgin Mary. The Pope sent them rosaries. One man who was civilly married asked for the sacrament of marriage to be granted. They made up a makeshift chapel and they would do prayers. The oldest miner would lead prayers and that became like a practice for all of them. What was really interesting is they really talked about the 33. One, they're pretty secretive about what happened in the 17 days. In fact, they've kind of like taken a little bit of like a vow of silence to like protect everybody's dignity and stuff in those like initial days where like they're not really talking about who did what or what happened or what bad thing. They did sort of talk about the democratic process that they had. Luis Urzúa, he was like, it was really important to have one person, one vote, and that everybody had a voice down there. Mm-hmm. It was like he was a leader, but it was like very much a democratic process. He also talks about how everyone sort of helped build each other up, because at one point in time, one person would kind of like go off the deep rails, but it was everybody else's opportunity to like support that person. And he was like, we all went through a day where like we were not well, and everybody else came to support us. And that became like sort of a practice for all of them. On August 29th, again, August 5th is when they went down there. On August 29th, each miner got about 20 seconds to speak directly to family members and have a conversation. And at around the area when the mine collapsed, family members of the missing miners came to this place. And initially they were sleeping in cars, but then tents were set up and they called it Camp Esperanza, which is Camp Hope. And so what happened was is they built food spots. There were police monitoring the area for safety. It became essentially a tent city with its own rules, and politicians would come, but these families would live there. So a little bit about the people that were down there. I just want to go through some of them. But Luis Urzúa, he was the shift foreman who became the de facto leader. He would like rally the troops. And he was one that coordinated a lot of the rescue attempts and operations with the engineers on the surface over teleconference links. Then you have Florencio Avalos, and he was the second command in the group. He was like the strongest guy. He was the most experienced. He had physical fitness, and he was really emotionally stable. Mm-hmm. He was trapped with his younger brother. There's this guy, Yanni Barrios, who is 50. He becomes the medic sort of vibe where they called him Dr. House, like the American TV doctor. But he would like work with the doctors on the surface and help monitor that. Mario Gomez, he's 63. He's trapped down there. He's the spiritual leader. He's the oldest guy. And he was the one that organized the chapel. Jose Enriquez is 54. He is a preacher as well. So he's a pastor. He organizes that. He does daily prayers. This guy, Mario Sepulveda, they called him Super Mario because he was super energetic, and he sort of like led the like communication and like was like sort of like the on-air host.
We have a Super Mario next door. He's the super of the building.
And his name is Mario.
And we call him Super Mario.
I love that. And then you have Ariel Tacona, who's 29, and he's the group's communication specialist. So he was the one that like didn't want to be in the video, but he would like organize taking the video and stuff like that. Ariel's wife was 9 months pregnant when he got stuck down there, and she ended up giving birth on September 14th. And they were going to name their daughter something else. And then I think in the 20-minute call, he's like, hey, listen, I changed our daughter's name. It's going to be Esperanza, which means hope.
Mm.
So they're still trying to rescue them. They've come up
and
with...
And she didn't like that name, but she had to
but
do it.
But she had to do it. You know, if someone's stuck in a cave, you kind of just like have to
so
do it.
So she's like, okay.
So there's... There's three plans for escape. The first, I'm not going to go into like what it is because I don't think you care. Basically, the first one is super precise but really slow and could possibly take until Christmas.
Oof.
Then you have a B, which is like newer technology and they're not totally sure. And then you have C, which is the faster one, but it's not as precise. So they're doing all three of these at the same time just to see which one is going to be the most successful. Basically, what's happening is they drill one, the B plan, the drill bit gets stuck. And they're like, well, that's it for that plan. But they figure out this way to like extract the drill bit and keep going down. And so finally, when they break down into the near the refuge, the miners then start reinforcing the walls and start working on the ground level to sort of excavate this area, right? To sort of be a part of the rescue effort. And what their goal was is NASA developed this steel cage that was like 28 inches wide that would maneuver down this whole shaft that they built and would bring up one person at a time. After 33 days of drilling, which is a total of 66 days in isolation for these miners, 66 days, the capsule has finally made its way to the bottom. But they have to decide which miners go first, which we talked about in the Thai cave rescue, which was they wanted the healthiest to go first because if anything were to happen, they wanted someone who was like strong enough to like if there was breakage or anything that they could survive. But also they wanted someone who was emotionally stable to go first because they were like, listen, if something goes like we want them to communicate to the rest of the crew, it's going to be OK. You could do this. Right. I did it. It's OK. So I mentioned Florencio Avalos. He was the first one to go up there. So it was the first four healthiest and strongest went first. And then they went in order from like worst health to healthiest.
Mm-hmm.
6 hours before the first capsule was to come up, they ate a large meal. They took they took aspirin to prevent blood clots. And they wore a girdle to stabilize their blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
They got moisture-resistant coveralls and sunglasses because when they entered the sun, they haven't seen the light of day for 68 days. So the capsule takes 16 minutes to get down half a mile. And so they have to remain calm, right? You can't have panic in there. So on October 12th, 69 days after they are stuck, Florencio Avalos is the first to come out. They asked everyone there to also be calm because they didn't want a huge celebration because they wanted everybody to focus and everything. But of course, the first one comes out. He's like crying. His family hugs him. He survived. It takes about 22 hours to get all of the miners out. And the last one to come out is Luis Ursúa. He is the foreman. He is the last one to come out. He comes out and he says, I finished my shift and everyone is accounted for.
Oh.
As a foreman coming up. They were trapped in the mine for 69 days. No charges were filed against the mining company. A lot of the miners obviously deal with PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a good story in that they all got out, but like...
It doesn't end there.
It doesn't end there. And it's like a sheer will of like... Their religion got them through and it sounded like these men did what they had to do and were positive in so many ways. I don't know how they did it. There was a movie that was made from the story called The 33, which is what they called themselves, the 33. They got no profits from the movie made from them. Mining companies, if any of them wanted to go back to mining, none of the workers were hired because they had this like stigma and fear around them. 14 of the 33 miners were awarded a lifetime monthly pension of 250,000 Chilean pesos, which is like $540 a month. Only 14.
I can't figure that one out.
They were chosen based on health, age, and opinions from the group of survivors. So, like,
weird.
Super fucking weird. And they all banded together.
Yeah.
And this was, like, national news, you know?
Oh, I bet.
So it took $20 million to save them. But they were saved.
Wow.
Isn't that wild?
That's crazy. I can't believe I didn't know that story.
Yeah, it was pretty recent. They, like, covered it. It was on, there was an episode of 30 Rock where they talked about it. It was, like, pretty national news. And I remember learning about it and not knowing what happened. So I had to cover it.
You know, I'm rewatching 30 Rock right now. And it's the best. I can't recommend it enough.
It's so good. At the end of
a long day, sometimes we watch some disturbing stuff in this house.
Yeah, we do.
And it's nice to end it with a little 20-minute palate cleanser that is 30 Rock before bedtime. Although I'm having a lot of weird dreams about characters.
Totally.
Like, it's weird. Like, I'll wake up and be like, I feel like Kenneth just showed up in that dream. We were just like friends.
Well, I mean, he would be probably... Who are you close? I think you're a Liz Lemon. I always find
I am a Liz Lemon. Thank you. And you're a Jenna Maloney, so.
Maroney. Yeah, no, my Maroney. My friend, it's so funny. I have a friend who's like one of the funniest people I know, and she's not a performer, but she just makes me laugh so hard. And I'm like, she's the Liz Lemon to my Jenna Maroney. Like, I'm that. I'm offended,
but okay.
Well, now you are. I mean, don't worry. You're coming. Listen, she's not a performer. I think there's, like, a big caveat there.
No,
you know?
Just give me your address. It's fine.
She's the one that listened to my podcast. I was like, I listened to it.
Oh, got it. Wow. This girl's really on my shit list for so many reasons. I love her so much.
We went to college together, and my senior year, all these underclassmen wrote, like, we're going to miss Carrie because X, Y, and Z. And a lot of the things they wrote was like, she's so funny. She's so fun. Like, she's so funny. And I came home and I put it on the counter and, like, this is my best friend since I was 10. And she looked at me and she was like, I go, what? And she goes, they think you're really funny. And I was like, yeah. She's like, it's not that. And she, like, puts her foot in her mouth so easily. She's like, no, it's not that. It's just you have so many other qualities that I think are more than funny. Like, because I'm not considered a funny amongst my friends. Like, they all think I'm not funny at all.
Did you say you're not considered a funny?
Mm-hmm.
You're not a funny?
I'm not a funny.
You're funny. In my life, you're funny.
They're like, oh, Carrie jokes. The worst jokes.
You, like, and Kala are my two funnies. And I don't need more than that. So... triflers need not apply.
Triflers need not. Either way, she was like, I love how she, like, read me and she was like, you're not funny. It's cute that they think that, but you're not.
How are you getting one over on them?
Like, what are you telling them? And then since then they've been like, yes, your humor has improved.
And then she found your joke book with tons of notes in the margins.
That just copied her jokes. Anyway.
Well, if you guys think we're funny, then I don't know, join Patreon. It's a great way to support two sort of funny people that are trying to make a podcast. Why not?
What else do you have to do?
And if you got better stuff to do, then you better get to it. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye, dear readers.
This podcast is supported by Talkspace.
When my husband came home from his military deployment, readjusting was hard for all of us. Thankfully, I found Talkspace.
Talkspace provides professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatric providers online. Military members, veterans, and their dependents ages 13 and older can get fast access to providers, all from the privacy of their computers or smartphones.
I just answered a few questions online, and Talkspace matched me with a therapist. We meet when it's convenient for me, and I can message her anytime. It was so easy to set up, and they accept TRICARE. Therapy was going so well, my husband and I started seeing a couples therapist through Talkspace, too.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, including TRICARE. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com/military. Go to Talkspace.com/military to get started today. That's Talkspace.com/military.